Shabbos Daf Chav Tes. So going back to our question of why does Rabbi Elazar in our Mishnah on Chav Chasam and Beis not allow wicks that were folded but were not singed for your Shabbos candles? Rava brings in a new answer that it's because you can't use wicks that weren't charred or a rag that wasn't charred for your Shabbos candles because they don't burn well. However, if that's true, then what do we do with the Brisa of Rav Yosef, who says that the Mishnah is dealing with garments that are exactly 3x3 finger breadths for Tumah? So why do we need this if we're not talking about Tumah? So the answer is that, the Gemara answers that because we're talking about the minimum amount of cloth that you need that can become tameh from mace, from a dead body. That's what this Mishnah, that's what this Brisa is teaching about, what the minimum amount of cloth is, because we have a Mishnah that says if you have 3x3 finger breadths then of cloth, that could become tameh mace from a corpse without the hem. You don't include the hem, meaning that it has to be a little bit more than 3x3 because it can't take into account the hem to become tameh. That's according to Reb Shimon. However, the Chachamim say you only need 3x3 finger breadths, even without the hem, meaning even with the hem, meaning it has to be just 3x3 finger breadths, even including the hem. And this Brisa is coming to teach that yes, like the Chachamim, it only needs to be 3x3 finger breadths. Rav says you can fuel a fire with the whole utensils on Yontiv, but not with fragments, meaning things that broke during Yontiv, based on Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Shimon says it's mutter, you are allowed to fuel a fire with even fragments of utensil that broke on Yontiv. Another case that Rav brings in is that you can use dates as fuel for your fire, but you can't use their pits, according to Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Shimon says you can. And finally, the third case Rav brings in is that you can use nuts, but not their shells, for your fire, according to Rabbi Yehuda. And Rabbi Shimon says you are allowed to use even the shells. So we need to teach all three of these cases, because if we just taught by utensils that broke, then we'd say it's only here that Rabbi Yehuda doesn't allow it because it was a whole utensil and now it's something totally different. It's a piece of utensil. But in the case of the date pits, where they started off as pits and they ended up as pits, you haven't changed the form of the pits at all, he should allow it. So this can teach you that even in the case of the pits, Rabbi Yehuda wouldn't allow it. And similarly, if it had only taught the case of the date pits, I would have said that the date pits, they started off covered and now they are uncovered. So this would be some kind of change in their form. And that's why Rabbi Yehuda doesn't allow it. But in the nutshells, which are always uncovered, and I've had undergone no change, then maybe Rabbi Yehuda would say it's fine. So it's coming to teach you that even in that case, Rabbi Yehuda would also not allow it. So Rav, when he had said that you can't burn your pits, you can't burn the pits from dates, this was not an explicit statement. Rather, we learned it from an inference that Rav says you can't burn the pits of dates because Rav was once eating dates during the week and he threw the pits into the fire. And Rav Chiya Bar Paschi said that doing this on Yontiv would be usur. However, Rav still did this because he ate dates on Yontiv and he threw the pits to the animals. And aren't we dealing here with Persian pits that have no fruit left on the pits Persian dates, which have no fruit left on the pits when you're done with them, and therefore they'd be muksa because they have no use because they're just pits with no fruit. So how is he able to feed it to his animals? And if he's feeding it to his animals, that shows that you could also throw them into your fire on Yontiv because they're not muksa. So rather, we're not talking about Persian dates, we're talking about Armenian dates, which still have some fruit that remains on the pits, and they're not muksa because humans can still eat them, and that's why Rav was able to throw it to his animals, and why we can say that he did agree that you cannot light a fire with your date pits. Rishmol Bar Chana asks Rav Yosef, according to Rav Yehuda, that you're allowed to burn whole utensils, but you can't burn fragments of utensils on Yontiv. The problem is, as soon as you burn a whole utensil, it turns into a fragment of utensil. So then how would you be allowed to stoke the fire? Because now these fragments of a utensil which are in your fire are muksa, so how can you stoke the fire and move them around? That shouldn't be allowed. So rather, the Gemara answers that you can stoke them like Rav Masna teaches that if there was a branch that fell from a tree into your oven on Yontiv, and the branch is really muksa, but it fell in on its own into your oven, then Rav Masna says you're allowed to add regular wood to this fire and burn all of it together. So too, in our case, you can add regular wood into the fire with the utensil and stoke all of that because you have the regular non-muksa wood in there with your fragments of utensil which are now muksa. That's totally fine. So another answer to what the machlokas is between Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Akiva in our Mishnah, that if you have a garment wick, does that become tummy or not? Rabbi Elazar says it does become tummy. Rabbi Akiva says it doesn't. So Rav Nuna says that the Mishnah is talking about a case of less than 3x3 finger breadths, and we're dealing with a rag that was designated for insignificant use. So this rag, which is less than 3x3 finger breadths and is used for insignificant use, can it become tummy or not? So we have a Mishnah that Rabbi Elazar says a rag that is less than 3x3 finger breadths that at first was designated to plug pipes or the bathhouse or to use for a pot to hold the pot and pour it out or to wipe down the millstone, which are all insignificant uses, but then you stored it for a later use, whether you stored it for prepared or unprepared use, this will all be explained, the rag can become tame, because Rebbe Lezer holds that the storing does change and make it more significant. Rebbe Yeshua says, whether you stored it for prepared use or unprepared use, since the rag started as something that was insignificant use, it was designated for insignificant use, the rag cannot become tame, because just storing it doesn't make it significant. And Rebbe Akiva says, if you stored it for prepared use, it can become tame. And if you stored it for unprepared use, it cannot become tame, because that doesn't change the significance. Ula says that they agree that if you threw it in a trash, if you threw it in a trash heap, after you had already designated for insignificant use, it cannot become tame. But if you placed it in a chest, everyone would agree that it can become tame. But this is where they disagree. In a case where you placed it on a peg or behind a door, what does that do? Does that make it significant or not? According to Rebbe Lazar, since you didn't throw it in the trash, it is showing that you are giving some significance to this rag, and it can become tame. But if that's true, why does Rebbe Lazar talk about unprepared use, right? If he's talking about something that makes it significant, why is he talking about unprepared use? Because Rebbe Lazar is saying that compared to putting it in a chest, putting it on the peg or behind the door would be unprepared use. Rebbe Yehoshua holds that since it's not in the chest, this negates its status as a garment, because you just hung it on a peg or a door and you're not giving it significance by putting it in the chest, so it stays as its status as insignificant. But then if that's true, why does Rabbi Yeshua talk about prepared use, which seems like it's giving it significance? Because according to Rabbi Yeshua, compared to putting it in the garbage, putting it in the on the peg or behind the door would be prepared use. Rabbi Akiva, he holds that in the case of hanging it on a peg, there he holds like Rabbi Elazar that it can become tame, and in the case of hanging it behind the door, he holds like Rabbi Yeshua that it can't become tame. However, Rav Hamnuna says that our Mishnah shows that Rabbi Akiva actually retracted his statement to be like Rabbi Yeshua. How do we know this? Because Rava says our Mishnah uses the words a wick that is made of a garment. However, the Mishnah should have said a wick that's made from garment material. So clearly we're talking about a cloth that's still considered a garment, meaning the case where you hung it on a peg. And Rabbi Akiva still says that it can't become tame. So even in the case where you hung it on a peg, which we had said before Rabbi Akiva holds like Rabbi Lazar, we're seeing that he goes back and actually says it's not tame like Rabbi Yeshua, even where you hung it on a peg. The next Mishnah says you can't perforate an eggshell and fill it with oil and place it over your lamp so that the oil will drip in, meaning you have a reservoir and you put an eggshell with oil and you make a hole in it and you pour oil in it, and the oil is going to drip down into the reservoir to light the to keep the wick going on fire. And even if you used earthenware instead of the eggshell, it still wouldn't be allowed. Rabbi Yehuda says that this is totally mutter, it's fine. The Mishnah adds that if a potter attaches a reservoir to a lamp initially from the get-go, meaning you add an extra reservoir of oil to drip into the wick, then that would be mutter, even according to the Rabbanon, because it's clearly one vessel and you're not going to touch the oil. The Mishnah then says that you can't fill a bowl with oil and extend the wick into the bowl to make it last longer. Rabbi Yehuda says this would be mutter. The Gemara says that we needed to teach all the cases of the Mishnah, because if we only taught the case of the eggshell, then you might say it's only here that the Rabbanon don't allow it, because you might come to take oil out of the eggshell and make the wick go out earlier. However, they would say that in the case of the earthenware, which is gross and you're not going to touch the oil, you might think that the Rabbanon are fine with that. However, it's teaching the earthenware case also to teach that Rabbanon don't allow that either. And if it only taught the case of the earthenware, I would say that it's only here that Rabbi Yehuda allows it, because it's clear that you're not going to take the oil out of the earthenware because it's gross. However, maybe Rabbi Yehuda wouldn't allow you to do it with the case of the eggshell, so we have to teach that case also. And if we only taught those first two cases, I would say with the earthenware and the eggshell, I would say that Rabbi Yehuda only allows it because there's nothing blocking the reservoir from the lamp, meaning it's all from the cup, that's all one thing with the reservoir of oil and the wick. However, when there's space between them, in the case where you have the wick extending into the bowl, which is external to the lamp, I would say Rabbi Yehuda wouldn't allow that, because you might come to take oil out of the cup, not realizing, or the reservoir, not realizing it's all one thing. And if we only taught this third case of the wick extending into the bowl, I would say it's only here that the Rabbanon don't allow it because of the space, and you might come to take the oil out of the reservoir. But in the first two cases of the eggshell and the earthenware, they'd allow it. So we have to teach all these cases to teach that the Rabbanon don't allow it in all the cases, and Rabbi Yehuda does allow it in all the cases. The Mishnah says, if a potter attached a reservoir initially to the lamp to make it all one big vessel, then it's mutter, it's allowed. However, we have a brisa that says, if on Erev Shabbos on Friday, a lamp owner attaches a reservoir to his lamp to add extra oil to the lamp, if he does it with plaster or with clay, then it's mutter. However, our Mishnah says it has to be a professional potter. So the brisa is coming to teach that an owner is able to do it if he's able to do it professionally like a potter. We have a brisa that Rabbi Yehuda spent Shabbos in Nitzah's house, and he filled an eggshell and used it as a reservoir for his Shabbos lamp, and Rabbi Tarfon and the Chachamim didn't say anything about it. So this seems to say that this seems to show that it's fine to do that. However, the Rabbanon will say back, you can't bring a proof from there, because it was only allowed in Nitzah's house because everyone was so careful, so they knew that they wouldn't touch the oil. In Avin Sipora was dragging a bench in a marble paved chamber, and Rabbi Yitzchak ben Elazar says, if I don't say anything about this, just like they didn't say anything with Rabbi Yehuda, this will lead to a disaster because people will think it's okay. So he told Avin Sipora that you're not allowed to drag it in a marble paved chamber, even though there's nothing wrong with it, because we have a gzera that if you do it in a marble paved chamber, maybe you're going to do it in an unpaved chamber, and then you're going to come to create a furrow. There was a gabbai of a shul in Batra who was dragging a bench before Rabbi Yirmiyah Rabbah, and he says, you must be going, Rabbi Yirmiyah Rabbah said, you must be going like Rabbi Shimon, who says that you're allowed to drag benches. However, he only allows doing large things, large objects, but you cannot, because you can't carry them, but he wouldn't allow small objects like this bench that you're carrying, so you shouldn't be able to do this. However, this argues with Ula, who says that the machlokes, the argument between Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda about dragging things, is only in regards to small objects. Everyone would agree that you can drag large objects. So Ula is saying that Rabbi Shimon allows you to drag small objects, which argues with Rabbi Yirmiyah Rabbah, and Rabbi Yosef challenges both of them, that the brisa of this argument between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon says that you can drag a bed, a chair, or a bench as long as you don't intend to make a furrow in the ground. And here, he's teaching both big and small objects and teaching you could drag both of them. So this challenges both Ula and Rabbi Yirmiyah Rabbah. So Ula will answer that we're talking about a bed that's like small like a chair, and Rav Yirmiyah Rabbah says we're talking about a chair that's big like a bed. So according to Ula, they're only talking about small objects, and Rav Yirmiyah Rabbah, they're only talking about big objects. However, Rabbah brings in the Mishnah that says that garment sellers, clothes sellers can wear shatnez clothes to model them for their customers. They can wear them normally as long as they don't plan to put them on to protect from the sun or the cold, the heat or the cold, because then you're going to be getting benefit from shatnez. However, the careful people would hang them on a stick behind them. So in this case, it's very easy for everyone to just be like the careful people and hang them on a stick behind them, but they don't have to. So too in our case, where it's easy to drag small items, still you don't have to, just like in this Mishnah where you don't have to hang the things up on a stick, so you'd be allowed to drag even small objects, and this is a disproof to Rabbi Yirmiyah Rabbah, who said you can only drag large objects. The next Mishnah says, you can extinguish a lamp on Shabbos if you're scared of non-Jews or robbers, or you have mental anguish and you need the dark, or so that a sick can sleep. In all those cases, you're putter. However, if you extinguish it because you want to spare the lamp or the oil or the wick, then you'd be chayav. You shouldn't do that. Rabbi Yossi says you're putter in all these cases where you're doing it to spare the lamp or the oil. However, if you're doing it to spare the wick, you can't do that because when you extinguish it for the wick, you're making it into charcoal, and then you're creating something, and that would not be allowed. Shkayach.